You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the state DNR is restoring law enforcement duties to park rangers less than a year after ending those duties. We'll find out about the change of course during our state news roundup. First, between now and the August 14th primary, Wisconsin Public Radio has invited candidates who are running in contested primaries for statewide office and congressional seats to join us for interviews on Central Time and on the morning show. You can find all of those interviews at wisconsinvote.org. Today, we talk to Nick Pulse. He's a businessman and a former Green Beret. He's running as a Republican in Wisconsin's first congressional district, which includes Janesville. Nick Pulse, welcome to Central Time.
Rob, thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
We'll start off with a 30-second pitch. What do you tell voters about why you're running?
Well, my why is my little guy. I got a 21-month-old. And between my time in the military and then my time as a small business owner, what you realize is our elected officials right now are not working for us. We have too many people that have been there for a career. And so my pitch is simple. We need to remove that concept of the career politician and the political class and put individuals in there that are going to work for a few years but are going to work for us.
And as we mentioned, you're a businessman. You served as a Green Beret for years. What in your background do you think makes you suited to represent constituents in the 1st District?
Well, two things. First is life experiences. So spending time in the military and the special operations community, you work at the highest levels of the federal government. And you really get to understand how it is that foreign policy is created, as well as monetary and fiscal policy. Secondly, as a small business owner, you're on the front lines, and you feel and you see the laws and the regulations that are passed from our elected officials, and you understand how it affects you. And we have too few people in Congress that have that type of life experiences.
House Speaker Paul Ryan has represented the 1st Congressional District for almost a couple of decades now. How do you think he has served the district?
Well, he, like you said, he's been in Congress for over 2 years or 20 years now, and he's done some things well. We just disagree on policy, quite frankly, and then some of the things that an elected official should or shouldn't be doing.
So what policy disagreements would you have with him?
Well, the first, what I mentioned earlier about the concept of term limits. I think you go, you spend a few years, and return back to the private sector. The second thing is on spending. We're spending way too much money at the federal government level. He favors omnibus bills, which I don't think are in the best interest of individual Americans here in the 1st District, as well as others across the country. On Social Security, I don't believe it's an entitlement. I think it's your money that's been taken from your paycheck for decades. And the problem is that we've had elected officials who have been spending that money rather than keeping it where it should be, which is in the Social Security fund. That's a couple areas that we disagree on.
Are there particular issues in your part of Wisconsin that you think need more attention from the federal government?
Well, not from the federal government, no. The number one issue that I hear crisscross in the district the last several months is health care. The cost of health care specifically and what it is that Congress can do to drive down costs and increase care. And we talk about that a lot. A few of the things that we can do is one is remove the Affordable Care Act. Second thing is that we can change the tax code, which will allow individuals to have the similar tax benefits and tax incentives that businesses have, and which would open up the market and allow a lot more increased freedom and increased access.
Talking to Nick Pulse about his campaign in the Republican primary for Wisconsin's 1st congressional district. I want to get into some of the issues that are out there before Congress. And let's start, Nick, with immigration. Can you tell us what you would want to do when it comes to immigration in Congress?
Sure. Immigration has to begin with security, border security. We've been talking about border security for 30 plus years since the last time we did a comprehensive immigration reform in 1986. We didn't get any border security in 86, and we haven't had any since. So the first thing we got to do is we got to get the wall funded, and then we also have to work on some of the laws that are not in the interests of American citizens.
That's border security. And how about legal immigration levels?
Sure. Well, As a country, we have the ability to decide the legal immigration, whether we want to increase it or decrease it. A couple of the challenges that are facing us related to legal immigration is the bureaucracy and the challenges it takes and the length of time it takes for people to do it the right way. That's one thing that Congress can and should be looking at. The second thing is some of the visa processes, whether it's an H-1B or there's a loophole related to the tech sector. And then specifically here in Wisconsin, agriculture and dairy in particular requires year-round help, and we don't have anything right now on the federal books that supports that industry.
And let's talk it's a good segue to talk about jobs and the economy. What kind of priorities would you have there?
Well, number one priority is continue to remove some of the regulations at the federal government level. I mean, that's the number one prevention of small businesses growing, and that's the number one job driver is a small business. And it seems like a lot of times politicians will pay lip service. They'll say, yes, we need to favor small businesses. They'll throw out stats like 70% of new jobs come from small businesses, but then the policies and laws and regulations that they put in place end up strangling and end up making it difficult for small business owners to build and end up favoring large business. So as someone in Congress at the federal level, we should absolutely be looking at increasing freedom for small business owners to allow them to prosper.
Would you want to review current regulations with an eye toward if they're favoring large versus small businesses?
Yes, actually, you actually want to start walking some of them back. And an example, kind of an analogy I like to talk about is if you and I own a barbershop, we have a two-chair barbershop, we're doing well, and then all of a sudden the federal government comes in and says, in addition to you and at the barbershop, you're going to have a CPA and a lawyer. So there's no way then that we would be able to continue to make a profit with these extra layers on it. So that's the type of thing that we need to approach on the regulation side is we got 80,000 pages of regulations at the federal level. And so we need to absolutely be looking at those and taking some off the books to allow individuals to prosper here in the First District and across the country.
Staying with the economy, tariffs have been front and center in the news. President Trump promoting tariffs on some products. Now we're getting back and forth with the European Union, Canada, China, other countries. What are your thoughts on tariffs?
So I think that if you look back in 2016 when the president ran, what he talked about a lot was NAFTA and some of these so-called free trade agreements. And really, they're not free trade. They're managed trade, where you have a large body of documentation which picks winners and losers. And the president, I believe, is taking action on what he talked about in the election on using tariffs to negotiate the ultimate end state, which is a NAFTA treaty that's more favorable to American and American businesses. And so that's the approach it appears that he's taken going forward.
Some Wisconsin business people have said, hey, wait a minute, these tariffs are hurting our exports. They're making it harder for us to sell to foreign markets. Are you thinking that's okay in the short run if you get those renegotiations down the road?
You know, you're right, and that's a good point. When you have these managed trade agreements, there's going to be winners and losers. And the businesses now that have built up around, that, for example, that NAFTA treaty that was drafted in the 90s have been successful. So if we're going to start now changing some of the rules and the regulations and renegotiations of that treaty, those businesses that have been built, they've built customer bases, they've built markets, they may end up being hurt, much like what you brought up. And that's a difficult problem, because some people are going to be winners and some people are going to be losers. And that should not be the role of government. It shouldn't be picking in winners and losers.
Now, you've got a field. There are multiple candidates in this race. How do you distinguish yourself from the rest of the Republican field in the First District?
Well, I distinguish myself first and foremost, again, from the life experiences. I'm the only one in the Republican field that has military experience. I spent over 11 years on active duty. Like you mentioned, the U.S. Army Green Beret, multiple deployments overseas, and then also the only one that's run a small business and been on the front lines of building jobs and creating payroll. The second part of the distinction is a historical understanding of the Constitution and the role that a U.S. congressperson is supposed to play and the role that the federal government is supposed to play. And we've gotten so far away from the Constitution and what's outlined in there, and it's hurting individual Americans.
It's a good place to leave it. Nick Pulse, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
That's Nick Pulse, a businessman and former Green Beret. He's running as a Republican in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, which includes Janesville. Jeremy Ryan, a Republican candidate in that race, will join us this time on Monday. Between now and the August 14th primary, candidates who are running in contested primaries have the opportunity to join us for interviews on Central Time and on the morning show. You can find all of those interviews at wisconsinvote.org. We take our weekly look at some of the top news stories from around the state. A meeting at the Capitol on Tuesday led to some heated words between state officials. The DNR is reinstating park rangers as law enforcement agents, and questions are being raised about incentives going to Fiserv after the company paid for the naming rights to the new Milwaukee Bucks Arena. Robert Menser is a statewide living and storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. Rob, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks, Rob.
Well, some strong words, as we said, were thrown around during this meeting of the state's Board of Commissioners of Public Lands. And this involved State Treasurer Matt Adamczyk, Secretary of State Doug LaFollette, and Attorney General Brad Schimmel. We'll hear a bit of that in just a bit, but set this up for us. What happened?
Yeah, so as we all know, the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands always the hottest topic in state government. No,
there could be a soap opera about this agency.
Yeah, I mean it's like almost a cliche. No, not really. So the state treasurer in Wisconsin has almost no duties whatsoever, but one job he does have is to sit on this board. Matt Adamczyk, of course, ran for state treasurer on the platform that there should not be a state treasurer, and has apparently made it his business to be sort of a fly in the ointment or a critic on this board. And right in this recent meeting, as reported by what I have to say is a pretty fun story out of the Cap Times. It showed just how that has rubbed other members of the board the wrong way a little bit.
Let's take a listen to Attorney General Brad Schimmel talking to fellow Republican Treasurer Matt Adamczyk during the meeting.
Matt, I got to tell you, I'm counting the days so you're not on this board. I've had enough. Doug is absolutely right. The string of demands you've made on the people who work hard at this agency has been unreasonable and abusive. So, and I've said this before on the record, mm-hmm. and I'm going to say it again on the record. Your personality and your approach toward these people is abusive and unreasonable.
Well, Fred,
we're done with this.
Okay, a little tense there. So what were they arguing about, Rob?
They do sort of financial business. The agency staff, they approve loans, they manage some investments, and they, you know, this is sort of part of what they're doing is being a steward of these resources. And so Adamczyk was apparently making criticisms of the like professional staff. These aren't not political people, but the full-time professional staff, saying like, you know, what is your background? Are you qualified to even manage these funds or whatever? And according to like the expert opinion, these are unfair attacks, and that in fact the funds are managed fine, or there's no evidence of a problem. It's probably noteworthy that the two officials who are who are mad at Adamczyk. Adamczyk is a Republican, and Doug LaFollette was very critical in that meeting. He's a Democrat, but of course, Attorney General Brad Schimmel is a conservative Republican. So it doesn't seem like it's not really like an ideological issue. It's a personality issue.
So we have Schimmel running for re-election, LaFollette running for re-election. Adamczyk is going to leave the office of state treasurer, and he's running for state assembly, I think. So as Schimmel said, he's counting the days. So this particular conflict won't go on too much longer.
Right. And Adamczyk is on the ballot for a state assembly district in the Milwaukee area. He is maybe notably one of three Republicans in that race. And I did notice online that one of the other candidates, Robin Moore, has a picture on one of her campaign materials with Brad Schimmel, standing next to Brad Schimmel in the picture. So I think he may not be endorsing Adamczyk in that primary.
Another story out this week, Rob, a change at the DNR, a change back at the DNR when it comes to law enforcement in state parks. What's going on?
Right, so the park rangers are back. the DNR has been sort of in an ongoing fashion has done a lot of restructuring and has eliminated a lot of positions within that agency in the last. I actually don't know how long it goes back, several years at least. And one of the changes that they made, not even a year ago, like earlier in this year, was to remove the certification of park rangers for like law enforcement duties in state parks and park lands. And this was when it was announced last year. The idea was that conservation wardens would take on these duties, and the state was going to hire a bunch more conservation wardens, 33, I believe. They ended up hiring 11. According to this, is I'm all this is according to reporting from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and there were big issues caused by that. So, like, there, wardens had to drive. There was a case where a warden had to drive from Sheboygan to Superior to do sort of like what would have been park ranger duties. And the state was incurring a bunch of costs as a result of that travel and lodging and so on, to the point that it's like kind of one of these backwards things. This was a cut. But now, by the current estimate, the decision to re-credential these park rangers is estimated that it will save the state up to $2 million.
Right. The original change was intended to save money, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And it's sort of I guess that the officials would say to streamline the agency, and you know it was a restructure. But like ultimately, we are talking about. Yes, efficiency, which is sort of a euphemism for saving money, right?
And what kind of reaction is this change, this reversal, getting from people in the natural resource world?
I mean, I think a big sigh of relief is what it appears to be. I think that there were a lot of people within, you know, again, like sort of like professional people within the DNR or just people who know a lot about, follow these issues closely. Who were critical of the plan when it was first announced. This is how it ended up that Paul Smith at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel was doing a lot of follow-up reporting about people's concerns and complaints and issues with these changes. I think that people see this as a positive course correction. The park rangers who lost their credentials will be allowed to reapply. I don't know. Maybe some have like moved on or whatever. But I do think that there are probably a lot of people who are glad to see this changing back.
Talking to Robert Mentzer from USA Today Network Wisconsin, talking about some of the top Wisconsin news stories of the week. And Rob, when we talked last week at this time, we mentioned that the company Fiserv had gotten the naming rights for the new Milwaukee Bucks arena. We call the Fiserv Forum. Now the deal is getting a little closer attention. Now, what's come up since then?
Right. So this week, my colleagues Patrick Marley and Molly Beck reported that this same company got a deal for up to $12.5 million from the state government last year to keep its headquarters in Milwaukee. And so this is like a source of criticism that the state gave this large aid package, you know, passed this large aid package for this company that then turned around and spent, we don't know the exact amount, but the estimates are between $7 million and $10 million is what the Bucks said they were hoping to get for these naming rights. So spent all this money on a thing that is really not, whatever else it is, it's not exactly related to the core business of this firm. They're among the critical, it's seen as a sign that this, why was this the state giving away this money?
And what has Governor Walker said about this?
Well, so Walker, so I just want to say, like, one way of looking at this, I guess, could also be that this state aid package really worked, because not only did the company stay in Wisconsin, but also they bought these big expensive naming rights to, like, associate themselves with Milwaukee. That's an argument that you could make. The argument that Governor Walker did make, as I saw, was that to note, it's true, the state aid package, they haven't gotten this money. It's not like the state did not write a check for $12.5 million to Fiserv. It's pegged to certain like benchmarks. I guess I don't have it in front of me, but usually there are certain hiring or like expansions. You know, they have to hit certain benchmarks for them to receive these state aids. They haven't done that yet, and so they haven't claimed the funds yet. And if they do, then they will. And you could say, well, isn't that sort of, you know, that's good for Wisconsin's economy too.
And bigger picture, Rob, this all comes at a time when people are thinking about state incentives to companies with Foxconn, with a possible Kimberly-Clark incentive package, not passed, but talked about, certainly. These issues are on people's minds right now.
100%. Yeah, I mean, Foxconn is a like 800-pound gorilla just because the size of that aid package is so massive. But I mean, you know, it's not nothing that the Bucks Arena itself is subsidized by the taxpayers to the tune of $250 million. So there's a significant public component to the creation of that arena itself. That's another case where economists debate, or I guess largely argue that may not be a wise investment, but it tends to be a fairly popular investment. I think there's a lot of scrutiny, and it's fair enough. It's fair to ask the question. A lot of scrutiny on how lawmakers choose to allocate taxpayer, you know, public resources to these private companies.
Rob, I want to take just a few moments. Given you a heads up about, but we've got this primary election coming up. It's on our minds. We're talking to candidates here. I just wonder, subjectively, are you seeing a lot of attention? Are you seeing a lot of yard signs and things like that? Is central Wisconsin in the grip of election fever right now?
Sure. Well, you know, it's the night is young, Rob. I mean, it's like almost a week and a half away before the election. You can't expect people to dial in yet. No. There certainly has been some candidates making the swing through the central Wisconsin area. There are some yard signs, but I gotta say I don't see the fever up here. But maybe it's just you gotta get a little closer to the election.
Rob, thanks a lot for joining us again.
All right, thank you.
That's Robert Mentzer, statewide living and storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. Wisconsin Public Radio has invited candidates who are running in contested primaries for statewide office and congressional seats to join us for interviews here on Central Time and on the morning show. You'll be able to find all of those interviews over at wisconsinvote.org. Today, we continue our interviews with candidates for governor. There's a contested primary for both Republicans and Democrats. Today, we talked to Malin Mitchell. He's a firefighter and president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin Union, and he's running in the Democratic primary. Malin Mitchell, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you just took the elevator up in our Milwaukee studio, and now you have the length of an elevator ride to tell someone why you're running for governor of Wisconsin. What do you say?
I'm running because we need change, and we've had close to 7.5 years of Governor Walker, and it's time for us to turn a page. The governor said he's going to divide and conquer us, and that's exactly what he's done. So it's time for us to actually get back to a government that cares about people, that puts people over politics, people over bad policy, and quite frankly, at times, people over party. So I'm running for governor because it's... We have to beat Scott Walker, and now is the time to do it, if any.
And how do you see your background as a firefighter, a union leader, preparing you for the candidacy and for the job as governor?
Well, you know, as firefighters, we respond to our community. We take care of people a lot of times on the worst days of their lives. And when people are at their worst, we have to be at our best. I come from a family of firefighters. My older brother is a firefighter in Atlanta, Georgia. And my younger brother's a firefighter in St. Paul, Minnesota. So, you know, giving back and being part of the community is within my DNA. And, you know, we have a lot of folks running right now. As you said, we have close to 8 candidates now that are still declared and in the race. But we've had enough lawyers. We've had enough elected officials and wannabe elected officials run for office. It's time to send a firefighter in. I always say that I'm the only candidate that actually still has calluses on his hands. And I'm the only candidate, actually, when I take off my firefighter gear, I work on behalf of working people when it comes to hours, wages, and working conditions. So it's time to actually get a candidate that actually cares or gives a damn about people, and that's why I'm running.
And you said you were making the case that it was time for a change from Governor Walker. That said, Governor Walker is making the case that, hey, we've got really low unemployment here in Wisconsin. The economy looking pretty good after a couple terms in office. What would you say to that?
Well, you know, Governor Walker looks at Wisconsinites as a statistic. And we do have a low unemployment rate, about 2.8% right now. But what's the unemployment rate when we have people working 2 or 3 jobs just to make ends meet? People are actually working to try to just keep a roof over their head or take care of their children. We have a low-wage economy, unfortunately. And I've come out very early for a $15 an hour minimum wage. But more importantly, actually setting up a government that helps people. And the governor can talk about us having a low unemployment rate, but people are struggling right now. If he actually get out there and talk with voters and talk with Wisconsinites, he would see that and realize that there's more that needs to be done.
Now, Foxconn has been a big deal over the last year or so. Ground was broken this year. We've got the contract. We've got the incentives. If you were elected governor, what would your approach be?
Well, you know what? Foxconn is it's here, and they broke ground back in May. I think Foxconn's a bad deal. To give a foreign company $4.5 billion with not to see a return on investment for 25 years is a bad deal. But there's no bank that would give you that deal. But they're here, and I would say that we need to make sure Foxconn is accountable to the taxpayers. I would not let them pump 7 million gallons of water a day out of Lake Michigan. But I would make sure that we set up a regional transit authority to get those who are unemployed or underemployed to those jobs. And Foxconn needs to be a good corporate partner here in the state of Wisconsin. And the governor can actually provide that and make sure that happens. So I would make sure Foxconn is accountable to taxpayers. The bill's been signed with much transparency. The contract has been put forth without a lot of accountability. So I'll make them accountable to the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin. And if we're going to have Foxconn here, I'm going to make sure that they have folks that don't have jobs to come actually and have those jobs. Make sure that they actually are paying the wages that they talked about.
We're talking to Malin Mitchell about his campaign for governor in the Democratic primary, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What question do you have for the candidate, and what issue would you like to hear him talk about? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation here on Central Time. We continue our conversation with Malin Mitchell about his campaign in the Democratic primary for governor, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What question do you have for the candidate? What issue would you like to hear his take on? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Steve is on the line in Sun Prairie. Steve, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a comment and a question. I am someone that voted for President Obama in 2008 and then voted for Donald Trump in 2016. So I'm kind of represent the group that the Democratic nominee has to reach in the general election. I was extremely insulted by some of the rhetoric that was used during the Act 10 protest that occurred that really caused it to be divisive. It's very easy to blame Governor Walker, but I do wonder what this candidate feels his responsibility is to change my mind on that as opposed to just being dismissive of it.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Malin, how do you reach out to a voter like Steve?
Well, you know, it's funny because I actually, as a state president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin, we represent over 4,000 members across the state, career firefighters. We go far north as Rhinelander, Superior, Antigo, Rice Lake, and far south as Kenosha, Racine, and Beloit, and everything in between, about 100 communities. And most of my members, actually, are like Steve. They voted for Donald Trump, or they voted for, I'm sorry, President Barack Obama, then 4 years later voted for Donald Trump. So I represent a lot of members that have done that, and it's about what we need to talk about at the firehouse kitchen table, I always say. And that's about an economy that works for everybody, not just a select few. It's about having an educational system that actually takes care of all our children. And our greatest commodity for our future is our children, and their greatest currency is their education. It's about having a educational system that works for everybody, but it's also about having health care. My mother's a diabetic. And there should never be a time where a diabetic has to choose between paying their health care premiums or paying their mortgage or their rent. And we have a lot of issues here in our state, but at the end of the day, it's about we need a leader in the governor's mansion. We need a leader, actually, in the executive branch. And And that's why I'm running, because I've led. I've been a firefighter for 20 plus years. My job was to give back to my community, and we need actually elected officials that give a damn. And right now, we're just not seeing that. And I agree with him on one point, that it's not about Democrat or Republican, because we have a lot of issues in our state that cross both lines. Like we have the highest African American male incarceration rate in the state. That's not a Democrat problem. That's not a Republican problem. That's a problem that we have as Wisconsinites, and we should do everything in our power to make sure that we tackle that. So we have plans for that. We have plans for all the other issues I talked about, but we need a real leader, and the state will not move forward without a leader in the executive branch, and that's why I'm running for governor.
Steve, thanks for the call. Go to Emily in River Hill now. Emily, hi.
Yes, hi. My question is, you know, we have a lot of schools. We have charter schools and choice schools and public schools. And how do you fund all of these schools with taxpayers' dollars? Are you thinking of, you know, looking at choice schools and how we're going to go about decreasing taxpayer dollars or voucher programs or charter schools and just, you know, just focus on our public schools to make those better?
Emily, thanks for the call. Malin Mitchell, school choice issues and where the funding goes.
Well, I believe that public dollars should go to public education, period. And there's no disputing that. The state of Wisconsin cannot afford two separate and unequal systems when it comes to schools. So I'm a product of public schools. My kids are in public schools. And we can't afford to pay for private charter or private schools through a voucher program. You know, if Betsy DeVos or Donald Trump or the Koch brothers wanted to fund public schools, they should do that with their own money and not with public dollars. So I believe that we need to, public dollars go to public education, that we need to make sure that we do everything in our power. I have a plan, actually. When I'm your governor, I'm going to pass a constitutional amendment that will require the state of Wisconsin to fund every school district and pay for two-thirds of every school district's budget. And that will alleviate a lot of the pressure and also alleviate a lot of the angst we have right now in the state by way of dollars. We are having right now school districts passing referendums just to pay for operational costs, which is crazy. I mean, you used to have a referendum just to put a new gymnasium on a school or put a new track around a football stadium. And those are capital expenditures. But now we're actually having referendums just to keep the lights on in Solon Springs. Me and Scott Walker went to the same high school, Delvin Darien. And obviously we took some different classes, but I went to the same high school. And it's time to actually fully fund schools once and for all, and I have a plan to do that.
Emily, thanks for the call. We're talking to Malin Mitchell about his campaign in the Democratic primary race for governor. Back to your calls now. Sean is with us in Milwaukee. Sean, hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. I have a question regarding your plans on how you're going to fix the roads in Wisconsin. So bear with me for 1 second. The roads in Wisconsin are some of the worst that I've seen throughout the nation, and I travel for a living. Seems like this problem has gone on for a very, very long time in the state through numerous governors. What is your plan to provide increased funding and to keep up with the construction and to perform in a timely manner in the areas that are needed throughout the state, specifically Milwaukee, Kenosha, and Racine? And I'll take my comments off air. Thank you.
Malin Mitchell?
You know what? Our roads suck. And that's the bottom line. And we're second in the country to the worst roads in America, only second to Connecticut. So what I will do is I would actually raise our gas tax, and I call it a user fee because, you know, no one likes paying taxes, but at the end of the day, government costs money. And I pay taxes. We all pay taxes, but it's not about the taxes you pay. It's about what government does with those tax dollars we send them. So by this way, state of Wisconsin, it's Madison. So we have to do everything we can to make our roads better. And it's not just an issue when it comes to our roads. It's a public safety issue. So I would actually raise The gas user fee, gas tax by 5 cents, and then I would tie it to CPI, the consumer price index, so that we don't have to keep having this discussion every 2 years. And we have a $77 billion biennial budget, and a budget is your list of priorities, and we don't prioritize actually building and fixing our roads, making sure our schools are top-notch, make sure we have an economy that works for all, not just select few, then we're going to continue down this path with the race to the bottom that we're seeing currently right now with, in my opinion, Governor Scott Walker. So when it comes to our roads, I would have a sustainable plan and tie our roads to the consumer price index, because at the end of the day, we need more revenue. And there's only so many ways that we can actually fix our roads. So we need more revenue to actually fix our roads. So I would tie the consumer price index. I would raise it by 5 cents. It's more of a user fee as opposed to a tax. But we need our roads to be safe and better than what they are right now.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Patrick is with us next in Madison. Patrick, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up, Patrick?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Yes, my question is regarding the high student debt right now. We all know that student debt is the highest it's ever been, and many of us are in debt. And so I want to know what Fireman Mitchell would do if he becomes governor. You know, what would he do about the high student debt?
All right, student debt concerns, Malin Mitchell.
I would actually allow students and those that are out of school to refinance their loans, just like we would do a mortgage or a car payment at very low rates. But more importantly, I would go and have a longer-term solution to where actually my son actually brought this. Actually, he doesn't know it, but my son one day played Fortnite, which is a video game that a lot of kids play. He played it for 12 hours one day. I couldn't believe it, and I said, "So you're telling my son's at the time was in eighth grade, and he was playing Fortnite for 12 hours, and him and his friends are actually at their own homes, and they were playing together. They were talking on the phone, everything else, like kind of like what we're doing right now. You're in Madison, I'm in Milwaukee, but I said, well, we're gonna let my son Carson play for 4 years, be in high school, and then." Get a great C average, and then we're going to pay for him to be in college for 4 years. I was a Bernie Sanders delegate in 2016, and Bernie Sanders talked about free college, free college, free college, free tuition, and that's all great. But my dad always said there are no free lunches, Malin. So I actually have a plan where kids or young people from 5th grade to 12th grade are going to actually have to give back and be part of community service, and actually volunteer at the local soup kitchen, volunteer at the local veteran center, and help those who have served our country, volunteer and help the senior who can't shovel their snow or rake their lawn because, one, they can't do it, and, two, they can't afford to pay somebody else to do it, and basically give back. And then when you get to a certain threshold of hours, it's called a Wisconsin Compact, we call it in our policy, that when you walk across the aisle or you walk across the dais or the stage in 12th and as your senior year, you get your diploma. You also get a certificate of completion that says you have fulfilled the requirements. So you have 2 years of free college or free tuition paid for by the state.
And I'll have to jump in there. That's all the time we have. Thanks to Malin Mitchell, firefighter and president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin Union. He's running for governor as a Democrat. Profiles of all of the Democratic and Republican candidates for governor can be found at WPR.org. We'll be interviewing candidates in contested primaries over still the next week or so. You can keep track of those interviews at WisconsinVote.org. And coming up Monday on Central Time, there are proven methods to keep moms safer during childbirth, but not all hospitals are on board. An investigative reporter tells us why. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.